Good evening, everyone, and welcome to ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness. This is Jackie Salvitti and my wonderful co-host, Veronica Entwistle.
Good evening, good evening.
Tonight's show, the fear of being left behind and or not being enough. Tonight we discuss the nagging fear that lingers in the shadow that we aren't enough or doing enough, and that just possibly we'd be left behind during this huge shift. It nags at the most inappropriate moments, and often we don't even admit it to ourselves. We shove it down into the shadow, of course, and hope it will go away, but it never does. So this is that I've already gotten emails from people saying what a great subject. So obviously we've hit a chord, Bonnie.
Good.
All right, and I want to start off by sharing a couple of emails. Some are funny. I kind of enjoyed them. Again, I greatly enjoyed last week's show about the acceptance of change in one's life and how change is a necessity, necessary component for allowing a relationship into one's personal space. And I like Veronica's comment about the fear of messing up one's order. And perhaps that messing up is exactly what is needed to experience a relationship. I had to laugh at myself many times during your show because of my own fear of relationship. I must admit, I have come out the other side. I have not come out the other side just yet. But I'm in process thanks to you and the team doing the power retrieval work with me. I know that some of my hesitation about being in relationship is due to being a single mother. I've been divorced over 7 years, and my children are now ages 15 and 16. They witnessed their father in and out of relationships since our divorce, with one resulting in a marriage and subsequent divorce. Although I have dated, none of my relationships became a full-time live-in situation. I could date if I wanted to, but I chose not to expose my kids to a revolving door of men. Perhaps I missed the chance to experience some internal changes and soul growth opportunities, but I felt I could so easily have messed up everyone's order in my house. Good for you, Ronnie. You've coined a phrase. I tell my children to stand in their own power, and if something in their lives doesn't feel good or joyful to them, then it probably isn't. I know that they see many of their peers in need of a boyfriend or girlfriend. I must say, neither one of my children share those feelings, and yet they have solid relationships with both sexes. This is great. I agree when you said last week that our children are different. They are different, and in so many incredible ways. I've learned much by observing their behavior and being in their presence. This is great. So in the meantime, I'll try to feel the joy in messing up one's order and not be attached to the outcome. And here are some other thoughts and questions I have. Maybe paying for sex isn't such a bad idea. Or perhaps you could ask the team if they can send me an ET to date. I thought this was wonderful. second one, and again, I want to thank everybody for your emails because they are such a wonderful addition to the shows. And sometimes I send, you know, I include emails that have come, you know, as a result of the work. But I love you all, and I know, Ronnie, you do too, and it's very important. You know, people really need to hear what everyone's feeling and thinking. You help others by sharing your experience. Another one, just wanted to share with you that it came to, this is after we did a power retrieval session, I just wanted to share with you that it came to me that I need to release with my ex-husband next. He has been one of the most profound influences on my visual situation. She has macular degeneration.
Oh, my.
Due to his attitude, which I was unaware of for 28 years, as I was attempting to see, in quotation, to pick ripe tomatoes, it came to me that he is the one who needs to be next. It will, and I just want to say here that with these power retrieval sessions, people's higher selves, their soul, their guides are all very involved. They seem to set up the next experience very quickly. They're very much participating in every single session because they are seeing the wonder and the power of this, and the goal for everyone is to retrieve your power. Some people are holding your power and as a gift to you. And I'll, more of that will come up in a moment here. It will all unravel as it will, and I'm so grateful for this opportunity to get it all straightened out and unfurled and to untwist the way that we've all been twined together over the years. What a freedom to be able to let go of all this and to finally be at rest with it all. Today's session was powerful, and I know that the results will be most important to my progress. I open myself to all that it can mean for me. I will send you more details on this relationship and how it affected my vision and the overall relationship, and you can have it for the file for the ETs to access for next session. I know it's important for me to process all of this that went on today. I appreciate you and the ETs more than ever I can ever express in words, and there are no real words that can express exactly how much I'm feeling. Hoping one day to get to meet you physically and give you a hug. Thank you. That was, and I, you know, I really want to say here, you know, that in the sessions and in the radio shows with everything we're doing, it's more than just ETs. It is beings of light. Ronnie, you've seen this in your sessions where, you know, people at the end of a session, they ask permission first of the higher self of the person that we're working with, and also of the client, that there has to be permission for them to show themselves more fully at the end of the session. And it seems to be a real shock for people to see the truth of these beings, of who they really are, and the clarity that they get in that moment, that these people have come in to play a role out of their love for us. Unfortunately, they don't remember. The last one, my darling friend, things are looking better. When I had the reading today, I was at my lowest point, having just discovered the crazy money situation out of the blue again. While I thought it was all fine, I think the timing happened this way so that I could be in the state I was, which would lead to my talking to the ETs the way I did in a resigned way, which is not the way I am, as you know. I said, I'm not doing anything anymore. I've done all I know to do. It is as if it is a curse. To which they immediately said, let's look, who stole your energy? Which led to Father, him again, and to almost an hour of energy retrieval return. After it was over, I saw my Father, the huge being that he is, in his light form. They wouldn't tell me who he actually was in real, just hinted, and once again I knew that he just did the contract we had agreed on, which still pissed me off. But then after the session, suddenly we were not going to L.A., decided to cancel the tickets. Really, there was no money. Can you believe it? And then it turned out that there actually is some money after all. Through all this, I'm feeling lighter, clearer, more my normal self again. I think the healing was extraordinary. I just don't have a reference in this illusion to what had happened. My beautiful darling, we didn't even have a chance to talk. I love how you said this is ridiculous. I'm keeping the portal open for 20 more minutes. Indeed, I'm laughing as I'm writing it. A good sign. Something big moved today. Time to get out of this prison for good. Love you. Miss the connection. So happy to have had the session. Sending all my love and gratitude.
Wonderful.
So, you know, again, these retrieval sessions are, and I want to share this before we go into the show. The last session I did today, was so fascinating because it was with a sister-in-law of someone, and her husband has been deceased for a long time, so this is his sister, and so they were fairly cursory in her life experience. What was fascinating was how much energy was sitting there with this person, and it went back through lifetimes, and I'm not only on this planet, and what I'm seeing now is that we are dealing with, in these power retrievals, are going back through time and space, if you will, you know, although there is no time, but they're going so deep and so far. And also the person with whom you're doing the retrieval is being set free as well. This is really touching my heart in a huge way. Enough about that.
I think the thing that's interesting also, one of the millions of things that are interesting, is that it seems to bring up our soul lineage all over the galaxy. So
yes,
I guess this is simplistically put, but it's so wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, in this retrieval that we did this evening, what was interesting, or that late this afternoon, was this person is aware of many lifetimes that she's had having to do with religion. And the person that we did the retrieval with, it was very clear that they had been there in various roles, even though they took on a fairly cursory role in this lifetime. And as we've worked with her entire family dynamic, it's been fascinating how each one of them, even those that are out on the fringes, were great participants in major lifetimes that they had that were really pivotal for them and created a lot of things that they're working on in this lifetime. So I would agree with you, Ronnie. This is big soul stuff.
Incredible web, isn't it?
Poof.
Mm-hmm.
they make me speechless because there's really, it goes so deep and so far, and it challenges in so many ways everything that we really, really know. And this person, you know, again, a huge being of light, you know, it keeps coming back to us that all of these people in our life experience, you know, came in to play these incredible roles over and over and over again. It's really, you know, it makes you rethink, what all of it means, you know, that this really, that we are each our own universe, that this is an amazing experience. And as, you know, we've read and heard, you know, how this is a small piece of who we are, and then, you know, it starts expanding into how much more of us is experiencing in other dimensions and realities. It's amazing. There is no limit to this, and it sends me off in these places that I have to pull myself back.
Hmm. It's now we're developing the family web rather than the family tree, right?
Yes, very much so. And, you know, Ronnie, your favorite term is cellular, and I would say that this is very much a cellular journey, you know, that we're working on now. Really cleaning up and clearing up the palette of all experience, and it puts me in a state of awe.
Well, it is. It's absolutely amazing. And are you getting feedback from people saying how... I have two questions. One is are our contracts all sitting in the shadow?
Oh, that's a really good question.
We don't have to quite know that yet.
No. I don't have an answer to that one. I have to be very honest for you. I leave it to you, Ronnie, to come up with a question. I have no clue.
Well, it's also very interesting because it's all a part of our makeup. The shadow, we were joking about this earlier, is so infinite, right? And I'm thinking that it includes all of this.
Well, I would say it's more in the unconscious. I don't know that it's actually in the shadow. I think our reactions to the experiences and our, you know, if we go back to the concept that the shadow is born with us.
Okay.
Then, you know, my sensing is that this is in the unconscious and that we're now working in those levels, which to me are amazing. And, if somebody were to say to me, how does all this work, I could not give you a real answer. I mean, I probably could if I was sitting upstairs in the healing room, you know, and in channel, but I don't know that I can do it, you know, in a conscious state. I see it happening. What I'm fascinated by is that over time, the changes are subtle. I mean, sometimes they can be very overt, but you begin to see them really shifting in your daily life
mm-hmm.
through the retrievals, and this I'm really seeing. your attitudes, your beliefs, your joie de vivre, your, you know, is all starting to come to the fore. And so, you know, what I'm saying to people is, you know, what I'm seeing is we don't want to leave out people who are cursed. I mean, it made me start thinking about cousins that I've barely seen in my whole lifetime, and yet I have a sensing that they've played extraordinary roles in other lifetimes. And so, you know, I'm also looking at, gee, these are people I need to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about tonight's show, because it's such an important subject. Both the fear of being left behind and the fear of not being enough. And, you know, nobody is exempt from this. And this is in the shadow. So, you know, let's start with not being enough, which is really at the root of the fear of being left behind. And what triggers the feeling of not being enough? And, you know, this is a real toughie, and I know, Ronnie, you run into this as well. It's so built into the system. You know, from the moment that we move into physicality and separation from God, Goddess, all that is, from our source, from the creatrix, well, you know, whatever names you want to use, we are feeling separate and feeling alone and not feeling enough because we're cut off. And now, many young people, and I'm running into this so much, and I'm sure you are too, Ronnie, is that I have so many young people who were in real contact in childhood. And I don't think this is only young people, although they seem to be more aware than a lot of older people. But they were in real contact. They knew their visitors. They were dialoguing, and then it just went away. And they have spent, you know, the majority of their life trying to get back in touch with it. I can't say how many times people have said to me, "I want to see them again. Why can't I see them? Why have they gone away? I can hear them, but I can't see them." You know.
And why is that? Is that a vibrational cover-up that they use?
Well, okay. There is an interference in our soul's journey here. And when we're young, many of us need that connection just to be able to stay. You know, I think if you were to regress most people on the planet, they had experiences in childhood. They don't remember them, especially between the ages of 1 and 3. And I have one darling client that at the age of 3, she used to be able to fly, and she knew it, and she knew she was magic. And she remembers the time there was a desk out in her backyard. They lived on acreage. And she leapt off the desk and hit the dirt. And she knew that she had lost her magic.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been angry ever since. And she wants her magic. And she'll try to wink her nose, you know, at the TV clicker to see if it'll float over to her, things like that. And she's angry. She wants her magic back.
Is she still quite young?
I'm sorry?
How old is she now?
She's about 36 or 7.
It seems like, you know, just like Pop the Magic Dragon or whatever, it seems like people lose that connection around 7. It seems to be the big time, doesn't it?
Anywhere from 3 to 7, yes.
Hmm.
And I had mine till about 5.
Hmm.
And, well, I had it later, but it was different. It came in as a real knowing after the age of 5. It was, you know, it came with great knowing and authority. You know, I was really a pain in the butt as a child. I'm preaching to everyone. Explaining to them that their version of the life of Christ is wrong.
I just knew that I had never been born and I never died. And I used to look at the pieces of air come together and how they work together. There's a lot of things like that, and I knew where I was before.
Beautiful.
So I wasn't extroverted about it very much, but I knew a lot.
Well, I think that was always my trouble, is that I was always extroverted about it, which really created a lot of stir. And I think that's what led to me being shipped off to all those foster homes. So, it really does begin in childhood, and this feeling of not being enough, with trying to earn mom and dad's love, which is of course the God and Goddess projection. So what you're really trying to do is get back to source. And this is the reason that we project God and Goddess onto parents. I mean, the more I see the way that Earth consciousness is set up, it's brilliant. I would love to strangle who did it, and yet I'm sure when we're done with all of this, we'll be celebrating them.
Do you mean that the projections kind of limited the infinite possibilities? Is that what you mean?
No. No, what I mean, well, it does limit it. I think that's a statement of fact. But in essence, it's a soul drive to reunite with Source.
Mm-hmm. It is, isn't it?
And so all you have is mom and dad, which creates the projection. And so, in fact, that's what you do. And so you're constantly trying to earn mom and dad's love and acceptance. And if you don't get it, then the belief that you are flawed is set in. And it sets in regard because moms and dads do not have a handbook. So you're going to take that on, that sense of being flawed, of not being enough, in childhood. There's no way to avoid it. Now, Lazarus talks about the wounding and all of these other things. I totally ascribe to all of that. But, it starts earlier than that. And because we're on Earth, we're cut off from the truth of who we really are. That's the agreement. That's why there's such tremendous soul growth here on this planet. And, of course, the big one, to me, is comparison. And this starts especially today, and I'm sure you see this too, Ronnie.
Mm-hmm.
You have a grandchild. Mine are older. These children start comparing themselves to others so young. And I remember doing that myself as a child. My circumstances were such that, and I know many people who are listening tonight, we start comparing, and of course, television, we had television, Ronnie, you and I,
mm-hmm.
and here we were watching these ideal families on television, and of course, our families didn't look like that,
mm-hmm.
which sets up another issue of being flawed. Why aren't my mom and dad, like Leave It to Beaver?
Mm-hmm.
And
father knows best, my goodness.
Exactly. The ideal father, the ideal mother, with today's television, it's certainly different. I mean, you get to see a lot more flaw and, character issues in family sitcoms. But, we're dealing with the people that are listening tonight, the majority of them, grew up where, they were watching a family, television sitcoms where the families were more idealized.
And it was exhausting, wasn't it? That stretch between what was and what really,
Oh, of course it is.
Yeah.
Was it exhausting? Yes, because, I lived in Hollywood, for
well,
a
Well, that's another level of the whole thing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was. I think the only difference is that because I lived where I did, I got to see stars in there. Real environment and, knew that it was an illusion. And I went to school with a lot of the children of stars and even with the stars themselves. So I knew it was an illusion. But nevertheless, when you're younger until you get into more life experience, for you it's real.
Right.
And, again, another aspect of being flawed and not understanding why mom and dad don't treat you like those parents on TV did. And then, we have so many people listening as well who are star children and who were automatically rejected coming into their life experience because their energy and their frequencies are different. And a lot of parents didn't know what to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't define why they were almost repelled by them, but many were. I don't know if you've encountered this, Ronnie, but I encounter this a lot in sessions.
Yes.
And so... and then you have, of course, the comparisons with siblings. I mean, the human condition is such that there is always, Lazarus has said, there's always going to be somebody who's more, taller, smarter, prettier, a better figure, more handsome, more athletic. We are a potpourri of beings. And, the agreement is that we come in with some of these situations so that we can push against them to drive us to be something different. We get to make a choice. We either rebel, you know, or we fall under the spell. And
well, you sure can't be harmonizing with them. If you're a star person, you can't really harmonize usually with the normalcy, can you, or else you lose it entirely.
Well, and this happens to a lot of people, though, Renny. A lot of people lost themselves for a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but the fear of, you know, they're already feeling different anyway. And, you know, not understanding why they are so different, why they feel stronger. Many of these young, you know, star beings that came in ended up being the strength for mom and dad and the family. They knew that they were stronger than any of them. I'm always fascinated by their stories.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then, of course, you have the other ideal, which is your movie stars. You know, these become your icons, your music icons and your movie icons and your television icons. And the stretch, as you said, very frustrating and exhausting of from who you are to who they are, you can't get there because it's an illusion anyway.
Mm-hmm. And it's not really your authentic self, so it's very uncomfortable.
Well, and historically, all of those listening tonight, all of those certainly that you and I both work with, Ronnie, the majority of them did not grow up with parents who were involved in cutting-edge thought.
Mm.
So they came in to forge that path and really had to push against so much, so many limitations. And they were set up so amazingly. You know, everybody, each one of us is so totally unique, and we're supposed to be. You know, that was part of the agreement. That was part of the deal, is to come in on our own, as you say, authentic, but our own unique frequency, taking on our very unique set of circumstances so that as we healed, that would go out through the collective.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really easy to, you know, we're all battle-scarred and damaged and still carrying around some of this stuff that says we're not enough. You know, again, this goes back to the power retrieval. That's why it's so damned important right now. Not only that, we're carrying imprints from parents. You know, some of us fulfilling their roles without even realizing it. I had a friend ask me the other day, you know, what was your mother like in terms of work? And I said, well, what an interesting question. And I said, well, she was driven. She was always an incredibly hard worker, always driven, always involved in something. And I sat there and went, okay. Bingo, I got it.
Familiar?
And interestingly enough, with all the foster homes I lived in, I wasn't with her that much. But I was with her enough to get the imprint, and I was born through her.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, I got the imprint. And so we're dealing with not only soldier stuff, but also imprints.
Mm-hmm.
From someone else's soul journey and path. So, you know, we have a lot of cloaks to shed.
We sure do.
And, you know, that's why we all need help, every one of us. Body image just is so big, you know, for not feeling that you're enough. You know, it's bad enough that children have to go through all the growing pains of being gangly or fat, late development, not being athletic, being popular, not being popular. So, you know, already, you know, even in school, even now we're seeing it in kindergarten and elementary school, these children are getting it fed back to them that they're not enough as soon as they get into school. If they don't have the right clothes, they don't live in the right house, you know, their parents don't have the right jobs. Today, you know, children, I think children were always pretty cruel, but, you know, I think they're they're pretty tough today.
Really harsh. Woo.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, children really aren't prepared for that. And people wonder why children are acting out the way they are and going through rage and, you know, shooting up schools. Well, these kids, you know, are frustrated and other kids are cruel. They're cruel. And they're getting it from somewhere.
Where do you think they're getting it from?
Well, I think they're getting it through television. I think they're getting it home. They're frustrated. They don't fit in. You know, if you look at what kids are, kids have always tried to, you know, set their own mark, be different. But, you know, now we're seeing them go to a greater extreme. If you look at, you know, the earrings with the big earlobes, and, you know, I've seen some stuff that just blew my mind. You know, it's not only the tattoos now, they're having things put under their skull. And, you know, they're really trying to be different. And unfortunately, they're doing it with things that aren't repairable. So then you're dealing also with society and the collective. And I think, you know, when you ask about the kids, I think this is also reflective of the collective.
Kind of seething right now, isn't it?
Sorry?
It seems like it's seething right now. It's kind of boiling or something.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. And people feel trapped in it a lot of times.
Oh, man, do they feel trapped. And I think this is part of the... A lot of these kids have come in knowing that they are different anyway. And then the society and life feeds it back to them. And they're... you know, they're playing it out in a very dark way. They get lost. Some of them certainly are volunteers. You know, we know that, but wow, it's tough.
It really is.
And then the negative ego, and I want to explain kind of a little bit about the negative ego. The negative ego is going to scream at you, you're never going to be enough, and you believe it, and because it wants to keep you down. And so I'm just... The negative ego versus healthy ego evolved because we gave the ego too much power. And, you know, the ego was originally created as a part of our psyche to protect us. This is hot, that'll hurt you, you'll fall in if you jump off that cliff. And we continued to give it more and more and more power. You know, well, take care of this, do that, and, you know, anyone who's done any studying about Jung or any of the Lazarus work is familiar with that. Now, as soon as you get into real growth, the negative ego is going to jump in there and try to stop you.
Because it doesn't want us to grow away from its power?
That's exactly right, and its control. And so... You know, Lazarus said a long time ago, the negative ego is out to kill you. And I absolutely believe that to be true. I mean, I don't want to make it a scary thing. But the recognition of what the negative ego is very important. Because the negative ego is the one that tells you you're not enough. It's also the one that tells you that you're Jesus, you know. you're the greatest thing that ever walked the earth. So it's going to get you coming and going.
Well, should I explain what happened to me today?
Please.
What experience I attracted to myself today.
Yes.
In my negative ego, prancing down the road to visit a neighbor who's not very well. So I was there to cheer her up. But in any case, she wanted to talk to me about my having too big an ego. And the thing that happened to me was I totally dissembled. I came apart inside. I left her house quite quickly. In spite of her telling me what a wonderful friend I am.
Yeah, right.
And I pottered up the road, kind of shaking and weeping, because there's this whole issue about the ego and whether you're too egocentric and what is egocentric and what does it all mean and maybe I am and if I reach too far and la, 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 la. I was really undone by the end. It was quite fascinating. I think that's been brought up by all the work we're doing, and it wasn't just my neighbor insulted me. It wasn't that. It was that she put her finger in a wound somewhere, and up came a million questions, and I really didn't know who I was and what right I had to be or whether I was enough.
There you go.
There you have it, eh?
There you go.
I recovered.
Yes, you have recovered, Bonnie, and thank you for sharing, because this is really, this is a big one.
It is a big one. And part of being on the path is resolving, you know, your presence and that you're not over, you know what I mean, over egocentric or whatever that means. Maybe we should talk about terms as well.
Well, anytime you try to break out, and I repeat this, anytime you try to break out of the accepted of the masses, people are going, there are going to be people who attack you who say, who the hell do you think you are?
Mm-hmm.
What makes you think you can do that? This is what holds a lot of people back.
And you must be egocentric.
Right. And, you know, and I have to say this, for years, you know, I have my friends in Hollister, I would always say, now, this is not my ego, and they would call me on it every time.
What did they say?
They'd say, stop, stop, stop. I mean, they'd really call me on it. And I finally realized that for years I had been saying this.
Hmm.
So I had to start looking at, where does that come from? I, you know, my fear that I would go into ego, it held me back from stepping out into my great work.
Hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I was always watching other people who held themselves out as spiritual teachers, leaders, whatever, and I would watch very discerningly to see how they were going to handle their power, what were they going to do with it, how were they going to use it. And invariably, I would see them give it to their ego and make what I call the left turn.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point, they started elevating themselves and holding themselves out as so special and wanting people sitting at their feet.
Becoming trapped by our identity, our role.
Exactly. And when you get there, you're no longer in service, except to yourself.
Right.
And you lose the essence of, I mean, even though these were people with great gifts, and it would sadden me, truly sadden me.
Well, it confuses me, too, I find.
Well, you know, Lazarus said a long time ago that the spiritual path is a razor's edge, and it is. You have to have a healthy ego to be able to go out there and do what you need to do every day.
Mm-hmm.
And believe in what you're doing and trust your guidance. At the same time, there is a difference between having a healthy ego and which allows you to dare to do things, and the other, which is the being, as you would, you use the word egocentric or negative, what I would call negative ego, is thinking that to be careful how I phrase this, there is a certain innocence that comes with an enthusiasm, that comes with bringing forward your gifts. You never want to lose that.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
Ever. That is the beauty. That is the wonder. Now, it doesn't mean that it doesn't turn into wisdom. It does. But I have seen this also over and over again with people who step out, even myself when I stepped out with this work. I was so damned excited. I was probably more excited than anybody. I mean, I was beside myself, and I could not understand why everyone wasn't lining up. You know, I just thought this was the most exciting thing I'd ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But there was an innocence to that.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't my negative ego. It was, wow, this is just the coolest. This is so incredibly exciting, I can't hardly stand it.
Well, you know, I get very, very excited about my work as well, and I found very often when I do, there's somebody right near me who goes, who do you think you are?
And that is them reflecting back to you, your negative ego.
Yeah. It's so interesting. And I go, boy, do they misinterpret me, because really I am being just excited. Mm-hmm.
Well, and, you know, the difference is to be able to calmly, when it doesn't trigger you, you know, now we're going to go back to Debbie Ford's book, The Dark Side of the Light Chaser.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Any word that triggers you is the word you need to look at and find out why.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had to look at why ego bothered me so, and I traced it back to my mother. And I realized that as a child, I saw how egocentric she was. And in my childhood, I decided, because she, the things that I admired about her, which were, you know, her ability to step outside of the norm, outside of the box, you know, to be different, to certainly way ahead of her time as a woman. But I also saw the other side of it, which was I saw her cruelty to others.
Mm.
And so even in my youth and my innocence, I judged that as being in her ego. And I absolutely, so I was overly cautious instead of being in a healthy ego, which says, okay, this is what it is, okay? And I know you, Veronica, you're not egocentric.
Okay.
But this is the trap. The reason we're talking about this for everyone tonight is that it's a trap.
Mm-hmm.
And it will come up and bite you in the butt.
Well, and that word ego is a real trigger for me, actually. It is.
Then you need to look at where that came from.
Yeah.
And trace it. Really work with the word.
I will.
Because somewhere in there, because the negative ego will scream, you'll never be enough.
Hmm.
And I think it's a doorway for your negative ego to jump in there and try to convince you you're not going to be there. You know, the negative ego, in all sincerity, you know, and even in some of the Nag Hammadi and so on, the references to the devil and so on, when Jesus wrestled with the concept of, you know, he could have all of this and do all of that, it was the negative ego.
Right.
It wasn't the devil.
Maybe we can do a power retrieval of the negative ego. Put me down for tomorrow, okay?
Okay, you got it. Okay, so then we hit relationships. And certainly those, if anything in the world will ever confirm that you're not enough, male-female relationships will do it to you. Unless you're healthy as hell. But somewhere all of us have those relationships that convinced us we weren't enough. We couldn't do it well enough. There was something wrong with us. In your case, Veronica, where you lost a spouse, you know, they didn't love me enough to stay. I mean, now, for some of you listening, that may sound very silly, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Even when you leave a child, there is that issue of being abandoned, that you weren't enough of a parent that they had to leave. And then the fear, the big one, of course, of being left behind. And that so many people are frustrated that they are not doing their great work now. And, Ronnie, again, I know you run into this.
I do. I even feel it in myself.
Okay, well, and I do as well.
Mm.
Now, I want to share here that regardless, and I mean, I look at this stuff and I look at the phenomena, and for those of you that don't know, I send them to hospitals and to people's relatives, and you know, I do this as a gift. I have stacks and stacks of stuff here, you know, of emergencies that have evolved with amazing stories of the things that they have done to help those that were in situations where we couldn't get permission. We had to get permission from the higher selves to intercede. And yet, even I wonder if I'm doing enough.
Hmm.
Quite more often than you don't.
Really?
And, you know, my concern is how far out there can I go? And I've been working on managing my energy. I'm going to start doing, you know, intensives or conferences. You know, that's coming. But I've been working to get my own healings done, so that I could actually step back out there and be able to handle the frequencies that get so increased when we do large groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is where I want to talk about the fact that everybody in every moment is doing their great work. There's never a time that you're not.
I mean, it's a beingness. It's being in our beingness.
It is in our beingness. And the most important thing that everyone can do is remember that every single thought they think, every moment of every day is making a difference on the planet. And I know that there are people sitting there and your negative ego is going to say to you, that's not enough. Mm-hmm. You're still never going to be enough. And, you know, people, not everyone's going to be an Oprah. It just isn't going to happen.
Oh, darn.
We cannot compare ourselves to other people.
No.
We'll get in trouble every time. Because if you compare yourself to others, you're never going to measure up. Because no matter what you do, if you try to emulate another, you are unique and individual. Each one of you has a unique individual, as you say, authentic self, that is in and of itself. When you own that, when you're in that, you are, your resonance, your radiance is extraordinary. And, you know, I want to talk here because this is, I think, more important than anybody really understands. For years and years, I was an outside cult consultant to Chevron Oil. And after I died, I moved to California and again became an outside consultant for Chevron. I was on the road a lot with my little Millie girl. And every day that I was on the road, no matter what I was doing, whether I was on the road or in my home, everything I did, I mean, on the road, I was sending energies out from my car everywhere I traveled. Every city I would travel to, I would sit in the parking lot or wherever I was and send love out to the entire city, just send out my resonance as far out as I possibly could. When I would go in to meet with the cities or the counties, I would set my intention to elevate every person I met, to value them, to let them know that they were important, that they had value. And it became a way of life for me, always. Always. In my own home, I had what I called my magic garden. And my girlfriend had said to me, deem it magic, and I did. And it was magic. You know, I had 40-something birds in this little courtyard. It was, and I could watch them dive bomb off the roof had all these different levels, and from my office upstairs, all day long they would dive bomb, and the hummingbirds would come up to the window, and things would pop up overnight. Nothing I planted. I had, literally, it was like living in Findhorn. but to me it was a magical resonance, and I said it with my intention. Not because I'm special. It was my intention. I could plant something in a year and be 5 feet tall and 5 feet across. So I can't do that in the desert, though I'm dry. But again, it was a matter of being in that resonance, even when we would play golf. We considered it our temple, that we were in our temple on the golf course. And we would just drink it in, and we would, even in between our silliness playing golf, we would talk about, you know, hold energies for different people and do all kinds of things. So the work evolved because I was in the resonance. And I, you know, and this is what I really want to say. It's being in the resonance of knowing that you're making a difference in every moment, that what you really want to do can come into your experience more easily, more elegantly, more readily. Does that
make
sense?
I like that a lot. That's wonderful. That's very helpful. I'm thinking of a number of my clients who are wanting to get out of certain experiences and wanting to get out of, say, Boeing or some big corporation and get into something that's more of their own personal work. And it's such a struggle for people to really believe that what they're doing with their mind and the energy and so on is really a potent, potent force of transformation.
It is. Mm-hmm. You know, if you work in a restaurant, if you work wherever you are, you know, I had to remember this working for Chevron. Mm-hmm. I knew that when I went to corporate office, I was in the belly of the beast, okay?
You sure were.
All right. And these men were terrified of me. It's the funniest thing I can ever tell you. I would walk into the building and people would scurry. They were actually afraid of me. And, you know, I would just radiate love and whatever. And the rep that I worked with at Chevron used to laugh. He said they'd see you coming and run. And I said, isn't that wonderful?
Big tough Jackie, yeah.
But not at all. I mean, the truth is that and I would try to bring as much resonance with me as I possibly could, and hold that resonance. I mean, even after I left, there were deals that I had negotiated with people that they would not talk to anybody else. The attorneys had to bring me in to finish the negotiations.
Great.
And because they trusted me, because they knew that these are people who had Chevron service stations or wanted whatever. And so, you know, again, being in your integrity, working in a restaurant, it's just such a perfect place. You can make a difference every day, every person you touch, even handling food. You can imbue it with love. You know, working at Boeing, okay, they're on the cutting edge of progression. You know, they're creating flying machines. You have to own the fact that your resonance is making a difference. For years, I wanted out of Chevron, and I kept asking, why do I keep being drugged back? And the answer was that because this is black gold. This is the heart. And it was. The heart and soul of what you will eventually see will control your planet. And I had no idea how right on that was. We don't always know why we are somewhere. Our job is to be the most effective, most aware that we can be wherever we are and look at it as an assignment instead of a curse.
Mm-hmm.
And be the best that we can during that assignment, knowing that the next best thing will come when it's time.
And also you really touch people with the radiance, the resonance that you're putting out there.
Oh, Lordy, can you? And they don't even have to know.
Mm-hmm.
You can sit at your desk and put out a field of resonance, of pure love. It only takes a moment. It only takes a moment. What's funny is the people I worked with at Chevron, I brought them all crystals. And every one of them had them sitting on their tails.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I programmed the crystals before I gifted them to them.
Hmm.
And so we can. There's never a time that we can't be making a difference. Ever. Ever, 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 ever.
That's a wonderful, wonderful thing to remind people. To be it, to be making the difference.
Well, and when you, again, I'm going to say this because it's so true. When you're in that resonance, things can come to you. When you're sitting in an energy of not wanting to be where you are. Now, you know, Abraham will say when you're in the middle of what you don't want, you send off rockets of desire for what you do. That's true. But right now, we need to be proactive, all of us. No matter what we're doing. No matter what we're doing. That is the greatest gift we can give this planet. I want to talk a minute here about Fire the Grid. You know, here's a case for those of you that went out on the newsletter with the links to her, the YouTube where she tells her story. And this woman, you know, was kind of tough. You know, she's got tattoos. And so when she went into this water with she and her son both, and they both died, her story is so incredible. And, of course, we're coming up on this the 17th. And she had 3 million people a couple of months ago. My estimates and what the team is telling me, that on planet there's going to be about 10 million people participating.
Yay!
And off-planet, greater numbers than that.
Great.
So this is a co-creative joint. Remember, we're the ones, people, to do this on our planet. They're not going to do it for us.
Mm-hmm.
They will join with us in resonance, infuse the planet with our intentions, but they cannot do it for us. This is what we're here to do. This single event can make a bigger shift on this planet than anything I've ever seen, and I have never seen even people that I would consider somewhat negative getting on board with this.
Mm-hmm. Very exciting.
Putting it out in their websites to all of their people. It is going out across the world in every manner imaginable. Now, this is something.
It's very exciting.
It is exciting. And again, you know, it can happen in a moment. In a moment. Now, you know, does anybody out there listening want to die in order to get there? No, I've done that. Trust me, you don't. It's not fun. But your impact, your difference is there. And people will come up to you and not know why. They'll want to talk to you. They'll want to share with you. I have one girlfriend that says, I don't know what she sells cosmetics. Everybody that walks up to me wants to tell me their life story. And I said, it's your resonance, darling. They recognize, and she says, and everybody thinks they know me. And I said, well, on the inner planes, they probably do. You're in disguise. Celebrate that, people. I mean, if I could give anything to anyone. You know, the other thing I want to say, too, is being in a crappy mood until you get to be where you want to be is not going to get you there.
No.
It absolutely will not get you there. You are holding it off and away from yourself.
Yeah.
Because your resonance will not allow it in. It just won't. And, you know, my favorite story is that I had to go to Hollister to find my innocence again. This happened because I played golf and I played with my friends. And I had more fun than I've ever had because I've never allowed myself to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And in that joy, I opened myself up to possibilities that had never existed in my concepts before. But it was in the joy that got me there.
Right on.
So,
I just want to say I'm doing a show next Tuesday, which is Fire the Grid Day.
Oh, excellent.
And I have a guest. We're going to do the Fire the Grid meditation in the morning, and then at 4 o'clock I have a guest who happens to be a healer extraordinaire, in fact, but she's also involved with going around the world and doing micro-lending things with women in very, very impoverished countries, like in Africa, Mongolia, and so on.
Oh, beautiful.
So I thought it was a perfect segue to have the Fire the Grid, and she's very thrilled about it and has people around the world doing it as well, and then coming in and talking about things that she's doing, you know, participating in to get all kinds of people fired up on a physical level.
Oh, Ronnie, that sounds absolutely wonderful.
I'm really looking forward to it, so tune in next Tuesday.
Yes. What time?
4 o'clock West Coast time, 7 o'clock East Coast time, here on BBS Radio.
Name of the program?
Radiance by Design. Again, it's resonance, isn't it?
Yes.
And I'm really excited about Fire the Grid. I know we're all really, I mean, it's such a community. It's huge.
It is. Everyone is so excited that I talk to. It is just marvelous.
So there's already a lot of firing going on, isn't there?
Exactly.
Very exciting.
Exactly. And this is a perfect case of how much of a difference we can make.
Mm-hmm.
Without having an official title or a website or anything. Every single person, their contribution is going to be exponentially important on that day, because we're all joining together. And our Earth needs us. That's what we came here to do, is to help this planet ascend. And if some people get there, great. But that's our job. That's why we're doing the power retrieval, so each one of you take enough of your own power to have more impact.
We can even fly.
I think we really are anyway, and I certainly know that most of us are doing it in the dream state. So.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, just my closing statement is to feel the joy and personal satisfaction of it. And I